I will take the pleasure and the honor and humble to introduce the speaker myself. Now, in 2005, when I left these hills to go down to Sam's Anna's office, Chrishell sent me down there with alumni to join alumni. Not only did I met Sam there, but I met the speaker I'm about to introduce. He's the first person I met in the Alumni Association. And when I went in there, he had a whole lot of bulldog paraphernalia on. So I didn't know how I was going to deal with him because I'm a Tech man and a Notre Dame fan. So, but nevertheless, we made it through and everything else. So we kind of wound up, and I really got to like the fellow. So as time went on, the time in the program, we got to know each other much more. And eventually we formed a bucket list to do all the things we want to do. And last fall, we went up to Boone, North Carolina, and we were talking. And as we were talking, we said, well, hey, what about doing, let's do a 12-step. Meaning that we want to give some service back to others. So we thought about this speaker meeting. Then, of course, we had to negotiate on that. Because me, I don't have a long story. Because if I had to tell my story, you about be gone right now in about 15 minutes. And that is the truth. So I turned to him. I said, you got a real story. And so this is what we are. And I'm so honored and humbled to present my friend, as I call him, even though he's a Bulldog fan. But I love him, and I want to present to you, without further ado, Mr. Steve Bulldog Thomas.
Before I start rambling on, and before any of the AA guys yell out, who are you? My name is Steve, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Steve.
Thank you, Dolphus. I guess on this deal we're supposed to say where we come from, what we used to be like, and what we're like now. So I'm just going to jump right into it, and if y'all want to ride this roller coaster with me, it's going to have a lot of turns, twists, peaks, valleys. It was a hell of a ride to get here. I was born in Douglasville, Georgia, 1950. I was one of three kids, older sister, younger brother. We moved to Douglasville. Was the country then. Really the country then. What I can remember of Douglasville, it was mostly farmers, pig farmers, whatever. There wasn't much in Douglasville. I was born in the little hospital. It's nothing like what it is now. It was just a little brick building. My dad provided well for us. He knew there wasn't a lot that he could do there in Douglasville. It was basically work in the mills or Hall Moonshine or something like that. So we moved to Atlanta, moved to big city of Atlanta, Southwest Atlanta. And we started out in West End. We lived right there by the West End Baptist Church, for those of you who know that. Really enjoyed it there. You could go to the movie for a dime. You could walk anywhere you wanted to walk to, and it was really nice. We lived in a little duplex. My dad got a big job at a place called Cleveland Electric, and he worked real hard at it, and he studied at it. He was bound that he was going to do what he could to provide for us. And we didn't have a whole lot then. We didn't have a vehicle of any kind. He took a bus to work from West End to Marietta Street. And then we moved on up, and we moved into a larger duplex, which was pretty cool. also in West End. And then after that, he was still with Cleveland Electric and decided that we needed more. He wanted to give us what he could. He hit the books. He started studying. He put in an application at Delta Airlines. He got on at Delta Airlines, so we moved into our first house. He stayed there and retired from Delta Airlines. That house, we moved to that last house there right next to Fort McPherson. And I was about 9 years old. I lived in that house till I was drafted, until I went overseas. So that's that part of it. And now, when did I fall in love with alcohol? It was there in West End. I went to a high school called Sylvan High School, which some people know where that's at. I graduated from Sylvan High School. When I was in Sylvan High School, I didn't really seem like I thought I fit in. You know, you had your jocks. I tried out for football. You know, I think I weighed 110 pounds, but I was determined I was going to play football. So I tried out for football. Coach liked my guts, I guess. They gave me a helmet, you know, pads, all this neat shit. And, you know, I got to go to the local doctor there. Hey, I'm going to play football still in high school, do my physical, you know. So I thought I'm going to fit in here, man. I'm going to play football. So they suited me up and everything. I was going to be a running back. And I remember first scrimmage. They called my number, and I was going to do a sweep around left end, and they hit me. And after they hit me, all I could remember was my face sliding along the end of the field, and all that lime that they put on the field was all going in my nose and all that stuff. And it was about bloodied, you know. But I thought, well, I did pretty good. They didn't tell me when you go around the end, you're supposed to cut back up the middle. I just kind of did a big sweep, so I lost about 4 yards. So anyway, the coach came up to me. I kept trying. The coach came up to me, and he says, Steve, don't think you're going to be able to make football team. I don't want to see you get killed, and I don't want to have to call your parents. He said, why don't you try out for track? The only reason I let you try out for this, you fast. So why don't you try out for track? So I did. I ran track. That wasn't glamorous. I still didn't fit in. Who? You're going to date a dude that runs track. I mean, you're out there in them little old shorts and stuff. And see how fast you can go from here to there. Boom. You're done. You sit down, right? And no glory in that. Well, shit, what am I going to do to fit in here? Damn, I got to do something. Darn it. So I tried to hang around with the big shots there in school and all. They wouldn't have nothing to do with me. That little son of a bitch thought he could play football. Don't have nothing to do with him. So started hanging around with the wrong crowd. And we started messing around. And one of my friends, he could get some beer from his dad's, and we'd do these little adventures. We would tell our parents that we were going to go camping up on the other side of the park up by Fort McPherson. Well, he'd bring the beer up there, you know, and we'd all go up camping. And I can remember my first beer was Carling Black Label. Another guy shows up. His mama drank a lot of wine. I don't know, just a big old green bottle of some kind of red wine. So we all go testing this Carling's Black Label. That stuff is bad. How are you going to do this? You know, we all gagging and stuff, you know, and this is awful. They said, yeah, but it'll make you feel good. It'll make you feel good. You ever say, I'm a dad. Oh, man, he feels good all the time with this. I said, well, let's try to get it down. We wasn't into smoking cigarettes then yet. We're just going to go straight to the mean, bad shit in high school we're going to drink. So we started, I started drinking that Black Label, and I got one down. The whole thing. And I can remember, it wasn't cold. It's time you steal it out of your dad's refrigerator and get it up where we're camping out. We didn't know nothing about coolers and ice and all that stuff. We just drinking that stuff hot. So, but boy, I loved it. I thought, it's pretty good. Feel good. One can of beer, of course, I weighed 110 pounds, and it didn't take much. Then the wine. Guy brought the wine. I said, well, we got to try that. And they said, I don't think we want to try any of that wine. I said, well, I do. Look at that big old green bottle. So tried a little wine. That was good. Like that. I noticed the other guys, you know, they're kind of slowing down a little bit, you know. I can understand that. This is feeling good, man. We can, this is right. It's the way we're supposed to feel. So after they started getting ready to get in the sleeping bags, whatever, I just went ahead and drank everything that was left. All the Black Label, that big green bottle. And boy, I was feeling real good then. So I woke them all up. And this little place that we camped at, it had this rope that hung from this big old tree. And I said, oh, this is going to be great. And shit, nothing can bother me now. Man, I am all boozed up, wind up, and ready to go. I want y'all to push me as far as you can on that rope, way out there. And every time I come by, just keep pushing me. And boy, there we went and all that, and the rope broke, and I hit the bushes. Crawl back up there and said, where you got any more beer? So I stayed up all night trying to find some more something to drink, you know, but I couldn't. So, you know, I thought, well, this is it. And then found out, you know, we could get the beer. We had these ways of getting beer and stuff. And we started to get popular. We could get beer, bring it to high school. That was cool. All you had to do is know the right wino and know what liquor store is behind. An old pop up there on the corner on Lee Street. Hell, he didn't care. Back then, they'd sell it if he was 8 years old, you know. So we'd get it and start giving it to our friends. And boy, we're all just drinking, having a good time. I get a girlfriend, everything's just rocking and rolling and stuff, you know. We cruising, drinking our beer. We'll make sure everybody sees us, see. So you go through the Burger King first and you turn up that Carling Black Label beer. And then we advanced. Man, I went to Slits. Boy, you drink Slits, you're a cool dude. Look at that brown can with that S on there. Well, that's some really, he drinks Slits. He don't drink PBR. You know, he drink the good stuff. So you go cruising through and you make sure everybody's seen you, you know. We didn't think about getting DUIs or nothing like that. We just want all our friends to say, oh, man, they got beer. Look at them. They cool. Rev up the motor a little bit and say, oh, man, this is great. Well, I tell you what, we're advancing now. Let's get some Michelob and go to the varsity. And we get a date up there with a Michelob and our hot rods at the varsity. So we did that for a while. So anyway, I fell in love with alcohol. And let's see, I might hop around a little bit, bear with me here. Then I drank every chance I got, finished school, would constantly lie. We went on more camping trips than anybody in the neighborhood. It was a camping trip somewhere. Hell, one time we ended up in damn Birmingham, Alabama, and bought some fireworks on our camping trip. Think Dad figured that one out because he knows they didn't sell fireworks in Georgia, but he let me slide on that one. Well, finally got my driver's license. Oh, this is cool. Got my driver's license. This is good. I mean, back in the day, man, everybody had these hot rods. I had a Barracuda. They had these Camaros. They had all these muscle cars and stuff. And the cool thing was, if you was a cool dude, what you did in your trunk, you had a cooler. And you always had a case of beer in the trunk of your car. And you just rode around, you was Mr. Cool and shit, you know. Well, this Barracuda had one of them little trap drop doors. I was the coolest dude. You didn't have to get out to go get the beer. The guy in the back seat just reached back, hit two latches, popped it down, and passed up a cold one. Now, that was cool. It wasn't fast, but, boy, it had a bar in it. So got my first car, moving right along here, and then, lo and behold, here we're getting about the time I graduate. I was starting to get popular then, as long as I had that beer, as long as I had that courage, you know. That's the way I got my courage, was with that beer and the wine, and anything had alcohol in it, whatever they had, whatever we could get, that was good. And daggum, I started moving around to other high schools after I graduated. See, I'm graduated now. Wow. I ain't working or nothing. I'm graduated. So I hang around other high schools, meet up with the captain of the cheerleaders at this Thurl High School and start dating her. Well, now I'm really moving up because, see, I'm out of high school. Got all kind of good friends now because he can get us beer and all this kind of stuff. He knows the places. Well, anyway, then the pot came in. The good old 60s. So I got real confused then. The damn beer is good because I get all my courage and it's cool, but damn, it's pot. First time I ever smoked pot, everybody in our neighborhood, it seemed like every neighborhood back then had a dude that already started with the pot stuff, right? Well, Lee Carwell, never forget him. They were all smoking in his room at his house. And I had whooped his ass one time because he picked on my little brother. So we didn't like each other too much. I don't know why I did that. I was drinking beer, probably why. And so he wants to make amends. Drafts coming up, people all freaking out, people getting drafted left and right, and then all the shit's going on, Woodstock's coming, and all this. And he wants us to come over to visit him, make amends. Kind of like call peace. Walk in this guy's room. Old house. I mean, I never met his mother. His bedroom's got a padlock on it. You go in there and there's all this day glow stuff and black lights and all this kind of stuff. And we're looking at each other like, what is this all about, man? This can't be as good as beer. So he lights one and we're smoking. I'll never forget that. We're smoking. I said, this ain't nothing, man. Let's go get some beer. What is this? He just said, well, just keep smoking. Then he puts some kind of Beatles stuff on or some shit. And he says, now listen, man, they're going to tell us Paul's dead. I said, what are you talking about? He said, yeah, he played this backwards and Paul's dead. I said, Paul ain't dead. I just held his own Ed Sullivan last week. Paul ain't dead. This guy was into some pot. So we kept smoking out, and then my buddy says, it's time to go home. Your mama said I could eat supper at your house. We need to go. So, okay, let's go. So we walk out that front door out of this dark thing with all these black lights and stuff, and it's like, whoa, bright sunshine and green leaves and stuff. And I don't remember going down those four old steps that went from his house to the sidewalk. But we was out there. And we start laughing, me and this friend of mine. And we don't know what's going on. This is the first time with this. So might have should have checked in, like my sponsor tells me, to also an addict. But we'll get down to that. And I got to move on now. So we float to the house as a half a block away. I'll never forget that. I'll never, ever forget that. A lot of people say they don't remember when they first smoked pot or what it did to them. I just know that my damn feet wasn't moving and I was getting a little closer to the house. But instead of what took him 5 minutes, took a damn day. I thought we was gonna be late for supper. And I wasn't hungry at all until I walked in there, and it bad shit. I said, "Whoa, man, am I? Are you hungry?" I said, "Yeah, we about ate mom out of house and home. They had no idea what was going on. Them boys got a good appetite." So we thought we're on to something now. We gonna really fit in with this stuff, man. We gonna be popular with this. This is good. Well, the pot smoking didn't last too long. Oh, by the way, we did go, after we got out of high school, we had to find something to do to look like we was trying to help out. So we went and worked for a crystal, you know. And my buddy, this Larry, my main buddy, he was the manager of the crystal, and I was assistant manager of the crystal. And we're still smoking pot and drinking wine, whatever else we can get our hands on. And I don't know how he got to be manager, how I got to be assistant manager, but this crystal was on Camelton Road. And we had this one lady used to come in there all the time, and I done went and got high and got some beer. And this lady always come in every day and order chili and a grilled cheese and a Coke. Sweet lady. It's another man if I can find her. And I said, and just as hateful, though, I said, "Here comes the lady that's going to get the damn chili and the grilled cheese sandwich. I don't feel like making that shit." He said, "Look, man, she's going to be in. You got to make the chili." See, y'all, I don't get too much into how that operated, but we made the chili in the back. We brought it up and put it in those neat little hot things. Well, anyway, I made the chili that day, and I knew she'd be the first one to get it. And buddy, you ever put griddle fry in chili? See, this is what that stuff would do to you. If you don't know what griddle fry is, that's that lard stuff they throw in there before they fry your eggs and stuff. And see, I did some of that stupid stuff. Well, let's move on. Oh, yeah, Crystal, we got real high one day, and it was our shift to go in and to do our management duties, but we just decided we were so stoned we wasn't going to work no more. We all waiting to get drafted anyway. Bless his heart, Dad, Mom, they worked hard. They tried to get me in college, but, you know, shit, times were tough. I knew shit where I was probably going. All about Canada and shit, didn't know how to get there. But I know one thing, don't smoke pot and try to walk. But anyway, we call the head guy up, call up and say, "We're not coming in. I didn't get that raise." This is my buddy talking, Larry. Says, "I quit." Well, I'm down there listening to him talk on this payphone. Used to cost a nickel. And I'm trying to listen, and then I'm giggling, and we're on pot, and we're laughing and shit. And he says, and he's laughing, and I said, "Tell him Steve quits too." He said, "Oh yeah, Steve quits too." So we go smoke some more pot, and let's say, "Let's go by the crystal and see what happened." We go by the crystal. There's our boss, the manager from headquarters, sweeping up the parking lot. Ain't this something? This is awful. Well, finally got a good job with a big company. Still waiting on the draft thing, not really sure, but got a good job with a big company, and they were growing. And it happened to be through somebody we knew in the neighborhood that got me that job. By the way, I worked for that job, 37 years. Got that job. Was in that job for 6 months, got put into a management training program, and was all really fired up about this. And back in the day, back then, when you got drafted, we all sat around and watched Ed Sullivan or something, and they had these ping pong balls that come out, had these numbers on them. You know, like one so-and-so, one so-and-so, and all that stuff. And so here's the family just sitting around here saying, well, let's go see if Johnny's going to go to Vietnam and get shot, you know. So we're, I mean, it was really, it's the family thing to do, is watch, see who got drafted in the neighborhood. So sure enough, 142 popped up. That's me. But I worked for this big company, so I had the benefits, you know, they took care of veterans. So I went, and found drugs. I still doing pot and drinking. No DUIs, didn't really get in no trouble. Burnt down a Ranger's fire tower one time, but, you know. Went over to the Carling's Black Label brewery over there around Forest Park and broke into one of them rail cars and stole 50 cases of Carling's Black Label beer. Statute of limitations. This is why drinking alcohol and being on top of the world and shit will get you. Didn't get caught. Don't know. Somebody's looking after me. Don't know. Don't know how I got out of that. But went on, did my bit. Went to Europe. One of the lucky ones. Did a little TDY 90-day thing over in Saigon. Came right back. Had to train some guys. Holy cow. Did they have some in Germany, did they have some hash? And when I got to Germany, I found out you're one of the two. You're a damn alcoholic or you're an addict. There ain't no other way around it. That's what you got to be, and we don't like each other. They call the guys that drink liquor over there, whoever drink liquor will call oil heads. Where'd that come from? And we will call just heads. Here come them heads. We'd have hair down to here, you know. We're an army now, really. Y'all seen Beetle Bailey with long hair? There he was, bouncing down through there, this long hair. Nobody cared back then. Well, then more drugs were around. The hash was good. We started dealing the hash. I always thought, you know, I like being in business and stuff, and this would be a kind of cool way to get to see Europe. So we started dealing this stuff, and we'd get it in 250-gram slabs, black Burgundy with a gold stamp in it, and all that kind of stuff, red Lebanese, whatever. So we dealt hash and did a little hash, and oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you, before I went to Germany, we decided we all needed to take some purple microdot. That was my first trip. Whoa. Damn, that was some shit. Especially drinking Carling's Black Label and taking acid. But never got sick. Lived through that. Got on over to Europe, you know, and was dealing and stuff. And met a nice young lady over there. Got engaged to her, met her family. They invited me to move into their home in their basement apartment. I sent Dad a message and said, sell the Barracuda and send me the money. I'm going traveling. So I did. I was in the Army now. We went up there and, you know, made roll call, whatever, messed around in the motor pool. Mostly everybody smoked. And we covered for the sergeant so he'd go to the NCO club and get his drinking started early. And then he'd cover for us when we was doing our smoking or whatever. But I bought that Volkswagen, moved in with that German family there. She had a really nice family. I was still doing drugs, of course. But it's, boy, that German beer. See, I'm going back to the alcohol thing. I kind of missed that. But that German beer with a bowl of hash, try walking somewhere with that. Whoa. Anyway, I did my bit over there. Met a guy over there. We become real good friends. We were friends until the day I got sober and called and told him I was sober. We had to stop being friends. We used to talk on the telephone. We used to drug and drink on the phone, and I used to black out. That was my entertainment, the guy I met in the Army. So I'm going to get back to because we got some chips to give out tonight, and that's the favorite part of these Friday night meetings to me, is to give out chips, see people get chips. But I came back, got my job back, went back to work, met my first wife, only wife. They don't like you being drunk all the time. And got married, went, restarted up the management program. The company started growing leaps and bounds. We opened up branches all over the United States and Europe. I got the Birmingham branch plant. I went over to Birmingham after I married my wife, went to Birmingham. We had a child. I had a daughter. She was a bartender. Who I needed to marry, kind of retired. But she know I like drink liquor and all that kind of stuff, so she'd try all these new drinks and stuff out on me, and I'd ask all these questions, and man, boy, gosh, could I drink some liquor? But anyway, kept the job, stayed over there in Birmingham 18 years, only stayed married 2 years. For some reason, I just wouldn't quit drinking. It got to be a really big problem. I just thought, you know, I just drank a little too much. So we made a couple of trips back to see the family over here in Atlanta. I don't remember how I got here. I had my baby and my stepson and my wife in the car. I still didn't have a problem. Wasn't doing drugs anymore. Drugs too hard to mess with. They're illegal. They got serious about that shit. 60s was gone. All that was gone. They put you in jail. You can drink all the liquor you wanted. And I had to have that. Had to have that liquor. So I could really, really do well at work. And I did. Drinking every day, I did well at work. We had 21 branch plants. My branch plant, when it opened, number 18, was the first one to turn a profit the first year it was open. And the last one when it was closed to make a profit when I locked the door. And I drank all the way through it. And I guess the reason I got through it, I was in the printing business, graphic arts. All my bosses were alcoholics. A lot of them were. And we just took care of each other. But I knew I had a problem, but I wasn't going to admit it. Wife left me. I was stuck in Birmingham by myself. I did get to see my daughter every weekend, and I would stop drinking on my own, get dry, whatever, just so my ex would let me see my daughter. I was very much afraid I was going to lose my daughter over this drinking, so I had to clean myself up some. I did what I could do. But she called me on it a couple of times when she knew I should not have been driving when I brought my daughter home. I got worse than that. Then I started running clubs and all this kind of stuff. And just, I'd smoke anything anybody gave me. Crystal meth, oh, man, I could work, I could party. Yeah, I'm going to show her I'm just going to go out. And shit, I was getting bonuses left and right. I bought me a new nice Monte Carlo SS and shit. I'm drinking that liquor and I'm going to talk to the world. I got it made. Well, they started closing the branch plants. All of them. Closed the one in Europe. Made three large divisions. I was lucky. They pulled me back into Atlanta and I was still drinking. I got back in here to Atlanta. I was still in management. They gave me the job to run the second shift. I got a case of ass about that because, hey, man, I've been here 30 years. I'm coming over here on the second shift. Why ain't I on the first shift? So I drank, and I got resentments, and I just kept on drinking. Well, they was kind of weeding out the old management, bringing in the new management. And when this happened, I wasn't important anymore. I didn't feel like to the company, so I just drank more. And then, before I came back from Birmingham, My father had retired, been retired a couple of years in Delta, and bought him a house. Shortly after he retired, he got cancer, died of cancer. I was drinking. Still bothers me. It bothers me. I made my amends. It bothers me. And I went to the funeral about drunk, and I couldn't help the family that much. I got sober a couple of days to help my brother pick out the coffin. It's about as far as I could go. So I had to drink. Even death in the family, I had to drink. This shit had done got to where it was necessary. It wasn't no fun no more. I had to have it. I was very sick. I had to have alcohol to function, period. And later on, after I moved back to Georgia, brother got cancer. He died of cancer. Me and my brother was holding my dad's hand when he died, and me and my mother and my sister were holding my brother's hand when he died. I did a little bit better on getting sober. Mother pleaded with me to try to stay sober. I did a little bit. Made amends to my brother also. Kept working. The company got bought out again. I just kept drinking. It got way out of hand. I couldn't go to work. I had the flu in the summertime. Man, I call up there on Mondays. I got the flu. I just quit going to damn work. Don't you know who I am? I made all that money for you people. I've been here 37 years. Y'all can't screw with me. And, you know, they gave me the benefit of the doubt. But they all, and I thought I had them fooled. Jesus. Man, you come in there, the damn alcohol. You think you're cool. You stay at 1 o'clock in the morning. You drink all that alcohol and got it all in you. And you get up in the morning and brush your teeth real quick and go into work. And you get in there and get hot. I was sweating vodka. You could smell it when I walked in the door, but I had them fooled. And I still have my job. Well, got on the pity pot, lost all my friends. Thought I had a few at work, but they were cutting my throat. Didn't have any more friends. Didn't want to go fishing anymore. Didn't want to do nothing. Just hit the bottom, straight down. That roller coaster came down, the wheels came off. And it happened so fast, I don't know what hit me. But I still couldn't quit drinking. I could not quit drinking. But I didn't want nobody's damn help. This was my problem. I'm not going to tell anybody I'm an alcoholic because I'm not. Everybody acts like this. Well, needless to say, it was getting up towards the holidays, and I got on the pity pot, and I got to drinking, and I got to lying, and I used all my sick days, and I called in, and they tried to call me because I was the only one that could fix a machine, and yada, 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 all that good stuff. I just would not answer the phone, and I sat there and decided I'm going to kill myself with alcohol. I don't want to live no more. This sucks. I'm nobody anymore. I'm on my pity pot, and ain't nobody poured that stuff down me, but that was my way out. But it was not no fun anymore. I had to have it, and I was sick. But I couldn't get help because I wasn't asked for it. So I sit there in that apartment, would not answer the phone. It had a security gate where nobody could get to me. I sat there. I lied. I called my mother on a Sunday, and we never worked on Sunday, and told her I just got home from work. I had no idea what day it was. The lies and lies and lies had piled up. That's what this alcohol did to me. Well, then I thought, well, shit, it's not doing enough. Why ain't it doing enough anymore? I can't drink enough. It's not getting me back where I want to be. It's not getting me back when I was somebody. What am I going to do? Well, shit, they're giving you all this damn Percocet and Percodan and all this shit for the pains you got. Well, hell, says take one a day, take four of those and drink a fifth. And maybe you get a buzz. You know, I'm looking for a buzz. It was gone. And alcohol is my life. It had become my life. Well, so I sat there in that apartment, and I'd call my mother or my sister, because I'd try to call them before they'd call me so I could get there seriously drinking till I blacked out. Never knew when the sun came up, never knew when the sun set. Didn't know what was going on. Lived on Chinese food for almost a damn month till I ran out of Chinese food and I quit buying food, and all I bought was liquor. I got so bad on the damn liquor that I couldn't even make it to the drive-thru to get the liquor, but I couldn't walk to the one on the corner. So I drove. I don't know what side of the road I was on. And I used to laugh at the people when I moved in those apartments that would let those security gates hit them, and hell, I busted through them. But I'm not an alcoholic, and I don't have a problem. Well, this went on for a while. Called Mom one night. I won't forget this. I still think it's the damn truth. Of course, it wasn't the truth. Called my mom up one night, and it was wintertime. It's cold, I think. Yeah, it was. It's because I always screwed up around holidays. I got an early start this time. I just blew Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and the whole bit for everybody. And called up one night and said, I was laying on the couch, and hardly ever got off that couch. Lost 40 pounds in about a month. I'm not going to get into the gross stuff. A lot of people's hit bottom. Detoxed by myself. Was pulling skin off the bottom of my feet because I didn't know what I was doing. Skin was falling off my body. I was still able to crawl. That's where I was. That's what this did to me. And I kept drinking it. So I knew I was going to die. Right then, I went. All I had was a little .22. No shells. I couldn't leave. I couldn't walk downstairs. I couldn't talk. I mean, it was bottom. I called my mom and said, you know, this is the weirdest thing. There's a damn rabbit in the house. It's what alcohol do to you. Drink enough of it. And I'm serious. I said, there's a damn rabbit in the house. How'd the rabbit get in the house? I live upstairs. There's only one way in, the front door. Door ain't been open. I said, I don't know how the rabbit got in there. Well, you tell me how the rabbit got in there. I said, well, it didn't come in the windows to know that. Oh, come in the fireplace. This shit'll screw you up. You don't have to take LSD. You take enough alcohol. What's the rabbit doing? I said, it's up there, everybody on the kitchen up there talking to my cat. Honest to God truth, they know, they heard me say this. I'm going fast, and I know I am, and I don't care. I don't care about my family. I don't care about my daughter. I don't care about work. I don't care about anybody. I'm done. I'm bottom. I'm hit it. The alcohol has whooped my ass. I was definitely powerless over alcohol, and my life was very unmanageable. What life there was, they got to me somehow, probably the day before I was going to die. But I remember that one night, as long as I live, I was hallucinating, dreaming or something, but I was on a couch, and I looked up to this wall, I don't know, what time it was. I think it was 3 a.m. I was out of liquor. I was beat, and I looked up at this wall, and it was just got bright as it could get bright. And I started seeing lights of all different colors. I remember this. And I shut my eyes. It scared me so bad because I didn't know where I was going. And I prayed. I asked God, I am not worthy of it. You have kept me out of trouble for all these years for some reason. There must be some purpose. This has beat me. I am dying. I do not want to wake up in the morning. Or if I do, I want to find help. Them two walked through the door next morning. They'd done their research. They looked at me and knew it. There wasn't a thing in the house to eat. I think she said there was a can of tomato soup. That was it. Nothing to drink. I was drinking vodka and chasing it with tap water. They got to me, and the first thing they had to do was start cleaning up that mess. I could not get off the couch. I had to have a bucket next to me at all times. I was detoxing. My mother came in, and I looked her in the eye, and I said, I prayed last night, and I'll never drink another drop of liquor as long as I live. I just need help. I can't do this by myself, but I am not ever going to put this poison in my body again. She cried and looked at me right in the eye, and I think she knew what I was talking about. And I ain't had a drop since. And she stayed there with me while I detoxed. And when I got to Ridgeview, they said, you should have been dead a long time ago. You do not drink for 33 years and quit. You die. I think I had a seizure too. I don't know. The whole place was tore up. I was finding myself in so many different places in that damn apartment, I don't even know how I got there. I never had looked in the mirror in probably 3 weeks. This stuff will kill you. And I hid it all those years, and all I had to do was ask for help and work the first three steps. And then I'd been on my way. But I was going to beat it myself. They got me to Ridgeview, got into Ridgeview, went to the access center. They went in, did all the tests on me, the P test, yada, yada, all this stuff, and said, you're stone sober. You ain't got nothing in you. Plus, you ain't got no fluids in you, and you're walking death. My sister was trying to help me out and said, we got to go get you some unemployment. God bless her. She was right. I needed some kind of income. And I went with her, and I don't even know how I walked, how I stood up, how I leaned up against anything. I could not pay my bills. This is how the bottom goes. My mother had to come in and pay my bills. I could not sign my name. I could not dial a telephone. I could not talk. All I could do was hang my head off that couch till they got me to Ridgeview and puke in a damn plastic bucket. Didn't even know I had a cat. That damn cat is with me today, and it's sober. That cat, it took me a year for that cat to have anything to do with me. It got pissed because I was using its litter box. Damn, I couldn't make it to the back. What's the problem? It's just me and the cat. And I loved that little old thing when they gave it to me. Well, it's still with me, man. It's done gone through the program. I done read it, the big book. It knows. It knows when my sponsee calls me. It knows when I call my sponsor. I tell it. I've read that big book to that cat I don't know how many times. Play them CDs and everything. I'll do anything I can to stay sober. I'll talk to a cat. I don't care what I have to do to stay sober. Ridgeview took me in, saved my life, got me back on my feet, gave me a few tools. I sit right here and froze myself to death because I weighed about 140 pounds, 35, and I started off at 175. Got in here in the wintertime. This didn't look as nice as it does now. I was freezing to death. I was in shock. I didn't know what the hell was going on. And all these different people were coming up here and talking, trying to save my life. And I didn't know what the hell was going on. But I just kept listening, and I kept going in my little room with all the other people. And finally, one day, I don't know how it happened, but somebody was up here speaking that day. And the day, that morning before, they gave me a big book. I had no idea what a big book was. I thought, just give me a Bible. I thought I was at the Holiday Inn, you know. I couldn't read that thing. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't read it. I thought it was a Bible. I carried that little baby around. I got my little paperwork where I was supposed to go home and tell them the truth what I did. I did. I told them the truth. Damn, I ain't done that in 30-something years. How you tell the truth? Jesus. So I started learning a few things here in Ridgeview. But the big book was the best thing they ever gave me. I opened that, started reading it, and I read that sucker all the way straight through. And I don't like to read. I only did one book before in high school. I read that big book, and I went back, and I looked at that big book again. I said, man, how in the hell did this guy know me that long ago? I was in the gutter, kind of. But I got that big book, I read it, and then I heard them talking about AA in here. Then my case manager told me, he said, I think I was here 6 weeks, something, I don't know, put me in day program, but I came every day because I didn't have nowhere else to go, and I was scared shitless I was going to pick up. If I picked up, I already knew that the string here didn't have to tell me. He told me. They all told me, but I knew. God told me. I pick up, I drink one drink, I die. That's all. It's simple. It's real, real simple. So I've got to work this program every day somehow, some way, whether it's emailing a friend in the program, whether it's calling my sponsor, reading the big book, talking to my sponsee. I got to do it every day, at least a little bit of it. I got to pray in the morning, I got to pray at night, or I'm going to die. And for some reason that night, God didn't want me to die. He put me here to do something. I don't know what it is yet. And it sure ain't going around the country with this guy here on the bucket list. Well, I got to close it now. But AA, I got into AA, they saved my life. I've got so many friends in this room right now. I can look at all these friends right here. My cell phone, it is full of names and numbers. I have no excuse to go out. I can call anybody in here. They're all my friends. I know it. I can call them, and especially my sponsor, 24/7. And they will talk to me or come get me if I'm doing that stinking thinking and acting like a fool, because they know, too, I cannot drink one drink, and neither can they. And with all of us together, we can stay sober, and the promises do come true. I'm living them right now. God bless y'all. I love you.
Steve Thomas. And I tell you why we negotiated that she should be the man to do the speaking tonight. Because he had a good story. We need to move on. We're running over time a little, and